Oh, it's Chris Rice. Really nice rendition of Martin Luther's favorite hymn, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. It's 11 minutes past the hour. It is Tuesday, and we've located Dr. Don Clark, our resident biochemist. We found him down in Garden Valley, Texas, where he's had a long weekend working in the vineyard, and so he says he's a little sleepy this morning. Is that true, Don?
It is true that I am sleepy. Now, okay. I wasn't necessarily working in the vineyard.
Oh, I thought you were digging out there.
Yeah, no, I actually, my wife and I and my two boys, we went down to Fredericksburg, Texas, mm-hmm. for the annual grape camp.
Oh, it's, boy. Hey.
Yeah, we didn't go out and camp in the grapes.
Oh, okay.
But it was a educational seminar series that goes on. It's a two-day series that goes on every year, and we learn how to manage grapes.
They must be serious about this Texas wine stuff, then, if they're having grape camps down there.
Oh, yeah. We're very serious down here. Okay. We're gonna get this industry going, and it's a young industry here. Mm-hmm. I mean, relatively to compared to the rest of the, Europe, of course, mm-hmm. and then even California, which compared to Europe is
They're quaking in their boots out there on the West Coast now, I think. Looking at
what's
this,
that?
I imagine California is quaking in his boots, or maybe just quaking.
And so
once 50% of it slides into the ocean, you guys are in good shape.
You'll be on the coast, and
it's rather interesting because we learned about different diseases and different treatment for diseases and how to set up a vineyard, mm-hmm. site selection, and various things like that, nutritional needs, and so it was quite valuable. We met some old friends that we've seen at these conferences in years past, and so that was fun to catch up, see how their growing season was. And, yeah,
did they have donuts for you?
They did not have donuts. Well, they did have coffee.
Okay. All right.
And we had good lunches.
They might have had.
And then there was a wine and cheese reception.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds nice. Yeah. Okay.
Sunday night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dr. Don, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and he joins us just about every Tuesday morning. We talk about the matters of creation and evolution and faith and science and such things. And Don, I'm looking at an article here from the Institute of Creation Research. It says, pre-flood human fossils revisited, because they're kind of taking an article that they wrote back in 1992 and updating it with newer science to see if it still holds true. Do we have human fossils from the pre-flood? I mean, it seems to me I don't hear a lot about human fossils. I hear about old bones being found now and then, but not so much fossils. Why is that?
Well, that's an interesting question, and of course, the original article that was written back in 1992 gave several reasons as to why that might be, and so we'll discuss those briefly. But the first question is, how does a fossil form in the first place? I mean, a true fossil gets you have to have a catastrophe, because, for example, the evolutionists would say, or the secularists would say, well, the typical story for fossilization is that an animal died, and over a period of time, the animal was buried in sediment, and then that sediment hardened, and the animal was then preserved. That's a nice story, but if you think of, you can think of examples where fish die in the ocean or in a lake or something. And what's the first thing that they do? Well, they float to the surface, and then they start to decay. And so by the time they reach other fish and creatures start chewing on them.
Yeah.
And so by the time they get down, there's no flesh left. They're pretty much chewed up, and bones are scattered everywhere. And those bones are not going to fossilize. They're going to just decompose. So What's absolutely needed for fossilization is a catastrophe of some sort where the animal or the remains of the dead.
Or plants, too, right?
Or plants. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Or plants get trapped in mud very, very quickly. And so there's no oxygen or very little oxygen, and that mud then solidifies into sedimentary rock. And we find, of course, evidence of fossil leaves, and I mean, it looks like, you know, whole leaves, like a big maple leaf. They call it something else because it's big, mm-hmm. and it was it's fossilized, but it's still a maple leaf. And other types of, you know, vegetation have been fossilized, and they find, obviously, bones of animals fossilized. And
But when they find these, it's not the native material. I mean, the leaf is not plant material anymore. It's all minerals, isn't it?
Yes, it's mineral. Okay. It's a mineral.
The original tissues have been replaced by minerals somehow. I don't understand that process, but...
Well, that requires water, mm-hmm. and, you know, we had a lot of water, and we had a lot of mud... being transported from one place to the next, you know, obviously during the flood. And so the flood, you know, explains beautifully, or post-flood type of activities where you had, for example, the ice age and then ice melting, and then you had kind of local catastrophes due to the, you know, due to the flood waters breaking. Post flood, but so there was plenty of water around, plenty of minerals around during that period of time to fossilize or to mineralize these remains, especially of soft tissue type of remains. Now we do find deposits in mud, as we've talked to Mark Armitage, for example, and his dinosaur bone, Triceratops horn, which he talks about, and has found some
Hell Creek formation up in Montana.
And found, so that is, those aren't fossilized; those are just buried in mud, and then, you know, there again, obviously some type of catastrophe buried those dinosaurs and creatures in that condition. But so the question is, what happened to the pre-humans, pre-flood you know, humans? Why aren't we finding them? Well, there are a number of possibilities. One is that, you know, land animals and humans have a low fossilization potential, and would expect to, we should expect a few fossils from them. And what I mean by that is that, you know, if a human, I mean, if we or animals, a small animal or smaller animals, for example, died and didn't get trapped in a mud flow, a rapid mud flow, we would just float to the surface and decompose like any animal that is trapped in water or, you know, dies in water and is decomposed by other things and by just natural processes. So that's one possible explanation, that the floodwaters, you know, killed people relatively rapidly, and they were the dead bodies were floating and, you know, decomposed and did not settle into the mud layers. The other possibility is, if the flood you know, buried a multitude of people and distributed their bones in the sedimentary rock, we would have it'd be very hard to find them, and they'd be scattered, you know, throughout, and it would only just be by happenstance that we would even, you know, find any remains. So, you know, it's one of those things where you've got a needle and you put it in the haystack and you're trying to find it. If you happen to look in the right place, you would find it. But if you you know, if you're not looking in the right place, you could spend an awful lot of time and
is it logical to conclude that if you find a concentration of fossils, there must have been either a concentration of animals and people and plants in that place, and a cataclysmic event, some dramatic shifting in the earth and floods and so forth, or maybe both. Or is it possible you find deposits where they were all washed to one location?
Well, certainly that is a possibility. I mean, especially with maybe animals that live post flood. Mm-hmm. As we would believe, and biblical history records that the animals, the land animals, came off the flood, and eight humans came off the ark. I mean, and then repopulated the earth, and so you had catastrophes after that. Which were a direct result of the flood that would accumulate these bones, for example, as I said before, kind of a post-flood ice age post-event that could have trapped a lot of these bones, and that's probably what we find.
Yeah, we've talked about severe weather and other climactic phenomena happening for, 600-700 years after the initial flooding, the separation of the continent. So there was really a long process. So lots could have happened during the flood.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, of course, the greater the population of, let's say, the individual animal, the greater likelihood that you would find fossilized bones or fossil remains of that animal, in traps. So I think the post-flood kind of traumatic events probably would have, while there might have been some, immediate burying of animals that lived pre-flood, after the flood and after things started settling down and the animals came off the ark, of course, and people came off the ark and started to refill the earth. Those were probably, if you find evidence of those, and I think we do, mm-hmm. they were probably, buried as a post-flood catastrophe, but perhaps not fossilized like we find during the flood events themselves. But, what happened to the pre-humans? Well, you could have had underwater mud flows during the flood, which ground up human bones as well as animal bones. But that would presuppose that the humans and the animals were living on the ocean floor at the time, which is highly unlikely. So mm-hmm. that explanation probably isn't really, a good explanation. With the floodwaters receding off the continents might have likewise pulverized, some animals, and I'm sure it did, and maybe even pulverized some of the humans. And as it washed off, it could have carried them into the ocean, and hence we would never find them again. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that is a possibility.
Do evolutionists ascribe to the notion that there was a great flood, a single global event, or not? Or is there a mix of opinions within the evolutionary community?
Well, I don't think they subscribe to a global flood. You mm-hmm. know, local floods, yes, okay, obviously we got evidence of catastrophe mm-hmm. all around the world, but a global flood? I mean, how could something, so massive have occurred? Well, I mean, we've got evidence for that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got abundant evidence for that, but yet it doesn't fit into the evolutionary model. And because if everything got wiped out, then how could we have what we have today if, everything got wiped out and we started over? And then mm-hmm. that leads you to the history, which is recorded in Genesis. And so that's not an appealing option, let's say, for a lot of those folks.
There's an example here of a possible, it's kind of hypothetical. I mean, this is an actual discovery, but there projecting how an evolutionist would react to news that, hey, here's an old fossil bone that you date as billions of years old, but it's just like a modern human foot. In fact, let me just read this paragraph. What would a scientist who was convinced that modern-looking humans did not evolve until 2.5 million years ago think of a human fossil found in layers assigned to 3 or more million years ago? Well, an answer came in 2011 when researchers demonstrated that a fossil foot bone exactly matched human anatomy. However, since its evolutionary age was just over 3 million years, they concluded, the evolutionists did, that it was from an evolutionary ape-like human that had an ape's body but a human foot. Sounds a little silly. And of course, the human bone was not attached.
Sounds quite silly, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And so...
Now, it was just a foot bone. It wasn't attached to other bones. There were no ape bones around. But it suggests what happens when there are ancient fossils found that don't fit into the evolutionary pattern.
Well, exactly right. And that's another possibility is that, you know, human remains are being found and just not being reported as such as in this case, or reported as being ape-like, even though the only thing that they found was the piece of a foot bone, which as they themselves described as being exactly human. So they create the rest of the story by just imagining, this is not fitting into our evolutionary time frame. And so obviously it was an ape human, and it would be nice to find the rest of the bones, but the only thing we've got is a foot, so this is the story that we're sticking by. Instead of saying, yes, this is a human bone, and it didn't evolve, and it looks exactly like the human bones we have today, which would... correspond to, the evidence that we, or at least the historical evidence that we have in the Bible the Genesis flood and all the other things that we've been talking about.
Now, I want to move on to that. I'm sorry, go ahead. You had more on this article?
Oh, yeah, one more point, which is probably the most reasonable explanation as to why there's no humans, in that in Genesis, chapter 6, verse 5, it says that the earth was also corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. Everywhere was bad, as bad as people can possibly get. So, and the intents of their hearts, were evil continuously. And we can only imagine, what that is. I mean, we certainly have evil people today, and it seems like their intent is only evil continuously because they go around hurting people, and we have to either lock them up or execute them. But consider the whole population being like that. Do you think that the population would last for very long? And so the suggestion is that they were killing off each other quite rapidly right before the flood, and that at the time of the flood there really weren't that many humans around or left, and the chances of finding a smaller population, of course, is much, much less than if you had millions and millions and millions of people, on Earth, if not billions of people, which, you could have had the behavior of people, remained good and pure as opposed to being corrupted and ultimately, corrupted as much as humans can be corrupted, which apparently is very, very evil.
Which brings to mind the question, how low can we go? And I think of Jesus' explanation of the end times, and as it'll be like the days of Noah. And if we're at each other's throats continually, I mean, that's a pretty scary scenario there. I'd like to end this article with a quote from Dr. John Morris, who wrote back in 1992, "If evolution is true and humans have lived on Earth for 3 million years, then many trillions have lived and died. Where are their fossils? This is the more vexing question," he says. Where's the evidence of all this long length of human life on the Earth? Don, you brought another article to our attention. Oh, by the way, we'll include a link to this first article in the podcast of our conversation with Don today. So if you really want to check out the article, you can. Well, I'll tell you what. While Don explains his second article, I'll put the link right in our chat window at brokenroadradio.com, and you can then go right to the ICR article if you'd like. Don, the second one you brought to our attention, I haven't had a chance to really read this, but it has to do with Ice Age babies buried in Alaska and genetic diversity. What do you have to say about that?
Well, this is also an interesting article, and it happened to be timely based on this other article, because we were, the other article, of course, is talking about pre-humans. Well, this is, pre-flood humans. This is actually post-flood human remains, and it's evidence of people's migration from the... from Asia, for example, or from Russia, and going across the Bering Strait, which was a land bridge, and there's no dispute that at one point in time the Bering Strait was a completely solid landmass. Today, mm-hmm. of course, it's much of it is buried underwater. And so it'd be hard for people to walk across now, but back then, and the question is, when was back then? The secular understanding is that was probably 20,000 years ago. Well, this happened post-flood, so and it happened after the dispersal, that is, after the Tower of Babel. And God confused the languages of people, and then people started to migrate away from Babylonian area, or the Babel area. And some migrated north up into Europe and up into Russia and the northern parts of Russia. Some moved, south, and some moved, obviously west into what we would consider Asia today. And then some of those people that moved probably north and ultimately moved west to, Mongolia, for example, populated that area, and some that moved into the Asian part would then, migrate over to America, to the Americas, the North America, and wind up in Alaska. And, post-flood is, as we've talked about before, the flood actually started the Ice Age, because you had warm water and all the volcanic activity that was going on post-flood, because the continents were drifting apart at that time. Would have provided, a solar energy blockage, which would have made the land cold. And so the warm water would then, precipitate out as snow, which then created the Ice Age. Well, during that period of time, there were pockets of land that actually stayed warmer, because you had ocean, wind currents that were coming off the ocean, the warmer ocean. And so you had land pockets where you had vegetation, and quite a lot of vegetation, where animals could gather, and migrating humans, for example, could gather and survive quite nicely. And so this particular fishing camp that was found in the Upper Sun River, they call it the Upper Sun River site, which is east of Fairbanks, was probably such a site. Now, there was a river nearby that they could go fishing, and apparently they were salmon fishing, and there's a lot of evidence from their archaeological diggings and finds that these folks ate a lot of salmon and did a lot of salmon fishing and were hunters. So not only were there abundant animals in this area, but obviously there were a lot of salmon as well. Now, the whole point of this article is that, hey, usually we find in communities like this that the lineage or the ancestral lineage is uniform. But here we have two babies. Actually, one was a baby, anywhere between 6 to 12 weeks old, and the other one was a preterm 30-week-old fetus. And the remains were such that they could, that obviously there were some cells that they could look at. And they looked at the mitochondrial DNA to see what the maternal lineage of these two individuals were. And it turns out that they were, at least the DNA suggested that they were different, and so that they weren't from a common ancestor, but that they somewhere along the line must have been two different people groups that had migrated and lived apparently together in the same location. That's not, you know, from a creation point of view, it's not unexpected that you would have multiple people groups possibly living in a same, you know, general area, or you would start to get some intermarrying going on. Yes, they might have had initially different languages, because God obviously confused the languages at Babel, but humans were very smart. You know, we like to, secularists like to portray our ancestors as being dumb, and it was only until modern times that we became smart, but the opposite is true, as we've talked about the process of de-evolution.
This is Dr. Don's famous theory, now famous theory of devolution. Yes, that we
of
are
devolution, yeah. Exactly. And so our ancestors were quite smart, mm-hmm. and probably had more brain capacity, not necessarily capacity, but were not fogged up with a lot of DNA degradation, mm-hmm. as much as we have today. And so their memories were excellent. Their reasoning ability were excellent. And picking up another language would have been, let's say, it might have been a lot easier than it is mm-hmm. today to completely learn another language. So the evidence they are suggesting, it says their reasoning is, okay, these people group must have lived in this area for 10,000 years. Well, we know that that's not the case. I mean, we know from an evolution, from a creation point of view, that these were migratory, you know, people. They were obviously fishing, and you know, other types of food gathering. In this area was probably abundant in that up until the time when the oceans probably started cooling down. And so this would have been maybe 400 to 500 or 600 years past, the flood now. And when that started happening, you would have dust storms and the temperatures would have started to drop even in these areas. And so they probably, would have migrated away and then finally moving south to warmer climates. Mm-hmm. So how long did they stay there? Well, you know, at the most, probably 700 years, not 10,000 years as supposed. And, from a creationist point of view, we would say, well, you know, there was probably mixing of peoples in that area from migration, from obviously the Asian, part of all of the world across the Bering Strait, and then, they probably settled there for a period of time and then ultimately moved south, and it didn't take them that long, to move south.
It's interesting to note, I'm just reading, this is a Smithsonian.com article. It says, while researchers don't know how those two babies died, the babies were buried in a ceremonial fashion. Now, one of these was a fetus. It was placed on red ochre, surrounded by hunting darts fashioned from antlers. That, according to the article in the New York Times, and so there was sorrow over these babies. These babies were considered not just tissue.
Well, exactly, and it also later in the article it talks about the a third baby being found, or a young 3-year-old being found who was apparently cremated and also placed in ceremonial type settings and garbs. So there was respect, obviously, for human life, and yes, as you said, probably sorrow over losing their children like this.
Interesting. This and the other article will be linked in the podcast, which will be up on our website here in about an hour or so.
And, there was a recent court case somewhere in the West, and I tried to find it under California, so I think it might be Oregon or Washington. But there was this remains found in the bank of a piece of property that a city was claiming for a park. And the state archaeologist came out and looked at the bones and said they weren't of that particular area tribe, that they were actually from, they had genetic comparisons that was much stronger from an area further south in China. Do you remember this story? Does that ring a bell, Don? I don't know how the case came out, but the local indigenous tribe was trying to sue for possession of the bones, and then possession of the land, and then stopped the park.
I do vaguely remember that story.
Yeah, you remember vaguely, and I think it was in California. It was in Oregon. Or one of the other, I'm trying to remember the.
But
rest
suggesting
of it.
Then that this person would have come across the Bering Land Bridge at the time and immigrated from China,
and it seems like the bones were also aged to be older than all of the ancestors of the local indigenous tribe, or it was previous to. Some of the oldest remains found.
Well, I think it's very logical to expect a movement of different people groups through the same area. If it was a habitable area where there was food and water and shelter, then various groups could have lived there over several thousand years. So it would be, and you would see that in terms of bodies together, they could well be mixed together. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Don, this is all interesting stuff here, and as always, we appreciate your time and your expertise. And again, we will link to these two articles in the podcast that goes up here in just a little while. Any other last thoughts on the second article, Don?
No, I think that we pretty well covered it. So.
Okay, well, it's interesting stuff. Also interesting stuff over at creationmoments.com. You might check out that website. You can link to it from ours at Broken Road Radio there. You find just a library after library of DVDs and written articles and things that present you with the science that supports young earth creationism. And I would urge you, especially if you lean toward the evolutionary, if you have to figure that's just the established fact of life. Well, there's science that says, no, that's not the case. And if you drain the emotions and the argumentativeness out of it and you take a look at this, you might be surprised at some of the scientific knowledge that's been discovered and put together regarding young earth creationism, just like the Bible says. And again, we don't maintain here that Genesis was a scientific article, but it's history, and you can learn truth in history as well. Don, have a great day down in Garden Valley, okay?
Okay, very good, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, see you next week, Don.